Hey everyone, this is Gary from the Eye Opener Society, and we are bringing you a few things on this episode that we haven't done before and or even spoken about. So this episode, I only wanted to start off by saying that there's going to probably be some little trigger warnings on here, and I just wanted to give a little disclaimer. The reason we are bringing this show out is not for anything else, but to maybe reach out and help those that may be going through the same things, or maybe you know someone who's going through these same things. The thing is, I have a real person next to me, my stepdaughter, who's going to be talking about things that happened to her. And like I said, this may trigger some emotions. Some people have either been through it, going through it, or know people is going through it. But I wanted to say right now, if anybody is being bullied or needs help with bullying, 1-800-273-8255. Call, because Hannah and I, we can talk about it, but we're not experts. We don't have any certifications in this field. Suicide, that's another thing. If it's something where you're at that point or you just want to talk to somebody, this is something that I think was probably one of the better things they've ever done. 988. You could call 911 as well if you're really that far or if you really need that help, but 988 puts you in touch with the suicide crisis hotline, and also sexual abuse. If you know anybody or if you're going through it, 1-800-656-4673. Like I said, this is kind of a serious subject tonight, and I would like to really give all honors to Hannah, who's actually going to sit and talk about this.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, welcome to the Eye Opener Society. We got a lot going on.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we really got a lot going on. This year, like I know we spoke about before, and we're going back to our roots, and we got a lot of things going on. This episode tonight, I know it's going to be a little touchy subject, but also this is going to be a perfect tie in to something else that we got going on. Finally, I know we've been asking everybody, hey, you want to donate to us? Here, go to buy me a coffee, go to this site. Listen, we don't need to do that anymore. We've partnered up with Reaper Apparel. As you can tell, we're wearing it tonight. So we're going to be doing a live commercial midway. It'll be a good, a little breaking point. I could go over the company and I could explain everything to you then. But tonight, very, very brave person next to me, somebody who might bring out some triggers in myself, because at being a stepfather to her, but we'll get through it. And Hannah, you're doing this because you want to reach people.
Yeah, I do. I feel like a lot of people are in the dark when it comes to these things, and they feel like they're alone, like they've never been through things. And I've been through a lot of my life. So, to raise awareness, whether it reaches one person or thousands of people, I want people to know that they're not alone.
That's great. I mean, I mean, hats off to you, Reaper Apparel, hats off to you. And I want also everybody to know too, we're filming everything. Like everything's going to now be recorded, kind of like our behind the eyes, but we decided to do the podcasts with video. And there's two places. You could go to YouTube and look us up, Eye Opener Society, and you could see our videos there. Or now we also are on Rumble. We're reaching out. We're trying to find other platforms. Rumble I've used before on the Radio podcast. Really good because there's no censorship or anything like that, which is fantastic. It's just another platform you could watch us. Rumble.com. Look up Eye Opener Society. Of course, I'm going to put links down to everything. But I want to get this episode out of the way because it's going to be heavy. Heavy for all of us. So, Hannah, where do you want to start?
I don't know. I mean, I mainly wanted to talk about bullying, but I don't know if we should just start.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think while it's tough, just starting right from the beginning, you don't have to talk about what you don't want to talk about.
Yeah, of course.
But I know you want to, and I know you're trying to reach out to other people. Mm-hmm. So start at the beginning, start where you want, and we'll just guide through this.
Yeah, so I feel like I want to kind of get it out of the way. My first trauma, I was, I think, age 4. And like Gary already did the discretions and everything like that, but I was actually sexually abused as a child. I was in disbelief for a very long time until it kind of came to life. And I was involved in like the investigation of things. It was to the point where my brain convinced myself that it was just a reoccurring nightmare of something that happened to me as a child. But then, you know, it kind of, you know, once the investigation came out, it kind of hit me like a really big freight train. And this was like 16 years later, you know, like that's how blockered my mind decided to block that out. But then once it hit me, it completely set me back in my life. I felt disgusted. You know, we talk about anything here, you know, like your sexual drive is just like non-existent anymore. You just kind of feel like not ashamed, but you kind of fear for yourself. And like, as going back, like I said, it was like right around when I was probably like 4 or 5 years old. It was a married in relative that's of course no longer married into my family and is in jail. But it was very hard for me to process. I don't really know how to explain it. It really set me back on life, because you grow up all this time just thinking something's a horrible nightmare, but then for it to come to light to you, you're just like at a loss of words. You don't even feel like you know yourself anymore. You don't know who you can trust anymore. And it just put me in a really dark place for a really long time. But then I remembered, and how I got myself out of it, I think, was it that it wasn't my fault and that there are very sick people out there in the world, but that it doesn't have a reflection on me, and that, you know, I'm not alone. There are unfortunately thousands of children that go through this today. But I think the message that I want to reach with this is that, you know, be careful who you bring your children around. You know, be careful of your surroundings. You know, sexual abuse doesn't just happen to children. It happens to anybody. So just be careful. I don't mean to sound like...
And don't be ashamed of it either.
Yeah.
You know, I know that's part of it.
You
feel that shame. Everybody's going to handle it differently, mm-hmm. obviously. But I mean...
I laid in bed for days, like days. Like I kept showering. Like I think I showered like... When I spoke to an agent, like I think I showered like 6 times that day, because it's just like it really hits you. Like you, like in your mental, you block things out that you don't want to, like you don't want to remember, you know. And as a young child, you think that this person is doing something that's okay, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was with me, is just like kind of like coming to the realization that, oh my God, my nightmare was true,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. But. So you're talking like 4 years old,
mm-hmm.
And it takes you all at times, like that memory, it sort of plants itself inside of you.
In the back of your head, you always knew it was true, mm-hmm. but I convinced myself that it wasn't just a reoccurring nightmare, but it was on more than one of occasion. So it wasn't like a one-time thing. It was something that I went through.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like I said, then you get older. And you start realizing it, because like you say, at the time, you don't understand. You don't know. And then as you get older, you start to realize there was something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that manifests even more.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes it worse.
It like, does, oh my God.
Yeah. Again, you blame yourself.
Yeah.
You know, but...
It takes a toll in like your entire life, like your marriage. It takes a toll in everything.
Mm-hmm. I can only... Imagine it's not easy, you know, even for me, like to sit here, mm-hmm. talk about it. And it's not like, you know, I know you and I, we talk about everything, but this is difficult. Like I said,
I'm touching on this very brief. I'm not going to go into detail when I literally could tell you like how I could recite my social security number or phone number back and forth, you know, like the instances are clear as hell in my brain now. Mm-hmm. And it comes into my mind more than I would like. But, you know, with practicing like meditation and, you know, self-love and positivity, it's gotten a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But before I really did that, it came into my mind so much that it was just like, I'd be like, I'm no more good.
Mm-hmm.
Like right. I would just leave work. Like I couldn't.
Yeah. It takes a toll and it keeps building up and there's ways to deal with it. And mm-hmm. everybody has
ways. There's steps, you know? You
yeah.
know?
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through that. You have to like, first it's like acceptance that it was not your fault. Mm-hmm. You know, second is just like realizing that there are sick people out there and that you deserve justice mm-hmm. and to not give up for justice, you know, scream into your lungs are blue if you mm-hmm. have to.
Yeah. And on top of all that, you could take the best person in the world mm-hmm. and destroy him.
Yeah.
From this, you know, and that's the hard thing. Like, I look at you, I see you as like the perfect human being. You have so much going for you. You wouldn't even realize that something like this has happened, you know? But yeah, I like living under the roof, I can see different things about you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could see where some of this can come into play. And it's difficult. It's difficult.
Yeah. Like, I'm a helicopter mom entirely, but I think it's just because, like, I'm not saying to use like something as like a crutch or like an excuse, mm-hmm. but the reason why I think I mother some like the ways I do is because of that event that mm-hmm. happened to me. It's like my child's never allowed to sleep over anywhere, like mm-hmm. ever.
Right.
I don't care. And that's like a firm rule for me. Like, I don't care if I knew the person's parent for like 15 years or something, like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Trust is probably the first thing that breaks down.
Yeah. And it's not even that like, it's like, I wouldn't even trust people because it's like, I don't even let my son go sleep like over at his grandparents' house or like my sister's house. You know, it's just a thing to me. Like, it's an absolute no.
Yeah.
And if that makes me a lame mom early, like when he gets mm-hmm. older, I'm a lame mom. You know, it's just, it's a, mm-hmm. it's a trauma response for me. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on top of that too, it's when it comes to trust, I mean, what happened to you, you know, it happened by family basically.
Yeah.
So it, yeah, you can't trust anybody. Mm-mm. You really can't trust anybody. So, yeah. If anybody, like I said, if anybody is going through this, like I say, it's difficult. It's difficult to talk about something, and it's very difficult to listen to as well. But again, sexual abuse, if you need to reach out and really, you know, talk, or if you need help, 1-800-656-4673. Get the help that you need. Don't hide. Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. Come forward, you know, come forward. You know, the sooner you get help, the better it is. Cause you know, like with you, it took so many years,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it just kind of manifested and gotten worse
yeah.
you know, for you. So get the help that you need, and get it as soon as you can. Again, 1-800-656-4673. Listen, we have an email address, the Eye Opener Society at gmail.com. If you, you know, want to talk or something, you know, you could talk to us. Talk mm-hmm. to Hannah. I mean, I know you enjoy helping people. So, you know, we don't have degrees or anything, but if you want to actually talk to somebody who actually been through it, experienced it or something, you know, how did you get through mm-hmm. all this? Feel free to email us or reach out for help if you really need professional help.
Because, yeah.
you know, I just want to stress we're not professionals.
Yeah,
this.
No.
But you've also, I mean, obviously since four, something like that, this progressed into the other problems that mm-hmm. you had too as well. But in between going to school, and I know this because when I met your mom, you were going through all this crap.
Yeah.
You know, with school and everything else. I mean, crap with this bullying stuff.
Yeah. The bullying, like I said, I wasn't going to get into like, actually, like what physically happened to me, the story, you know, like the facts of like the sexual abuse that happened to me. But as far as bullying, I'm an open book with that. I think I first started getting bullied in fifth grade. I was one of the first girls to get my period.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, girls and guys, like, just like it started as something like stupid, you know, like, but when you have a child who has mental illnesses, you know, first signs of mental illness when I was like a young adolescent child, like it's going to affect me way more. But they used to call me like diaper butt, I think it was, or something like that. And I remember being petrified to like go to the bathroom, to like handle my lady business and everything like that, because I was just so afraid. So I used to start wearing baggy clothes. And when I started wearing baggy clothes, this is when kids started calling me fat. And I was never fat.
Still no. Not fat.
Yeah, no. The fattest I've ever been was when I was 41 weeks pregnant. But it got to the point then where that continued into sixth grade and a little bit of seventh grade. And then seventh grade, I decided, oh, okay, I'm fat. I'm just not going to eat. So I didn't eat. I didn't eat for weeks. If I were to eat anything, I literally would try to make myself throw up. Or it would be to the point where my stomach was shrinking so much that I would just eat like a couple like of fries or something like that and be like, oh, my stomach just hurts. And like my grandparents or my mom would be like, oh, okay, here's some Pepto, because like they just thought I had a stomach ache all the time. You know, the only thing that I consumed, I think, during the times where I just like starved myself was like liquids. Mm-hmm. That was it.
I mean, I don't know if, because I'm going back, I'm trying to remember. I didn't think you had that problem too, but I mean, damn, you went through.
Yeah, this is when I was living with my grandparents.
Yeah, so okay, so I didn't really know that as well.
And you know, living with your grandparents, they just like don't really, you know, they're not really like, they're not aware of like mm-hmm. eating disorders or like noticing things like that. They're just kind of like in their own element, like, oh, she's mm-hmm. not hungry today or something like that. Or I'd be like, oh, I'm eating downstairs, and I would just throw my food away.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's. Now, I want to kind of throw something in here, and I don't want to play devil's advocate. I don't want to sound like the bad guy or anything like that. Because I'm going to have you get into like bullying to what level, to where it affects your life so much. Because listen, I grew up in New York City, the Bronx, you know, school, everything was school ground rules, you know, playground rules. And there was bullying. It was almost like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not justifying anything or anything, but I feel that bullying on some level is normal for growing up.
It definitely
it
is.
Teaches you hierarchy. It teaches you mm-hmm. about yourself, your limitations, and, you know, but I think also where I'm missing is this generational gap to where bullying was, you know,
you're stupid, or you get shoved or something.
Right. Usually it was the alpha males in, you know, my school that used to, I mean, this was grade school, but we had some kids that were tough guys, you know, young kids. And yeah, they'd go around bullying and picking on, but you knew how to stand up to them. And mm-hmm. once you did, there was a level of respect from them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's definitely a part of growing up. I don't think bullying, but that's not what you experienced, though.
No. Yeah. And that was just like, honestly, like the beginning of it. Because it was to the point where it's like, I grew up so sensitive. And I grew up like treating everyone as equal, you know, like my aunt, she has Down syndrome. And I like just grew up just like knowing that, like, you know, even though she looks different, like, you know, whether it be like she has Down syndrome or like someone's color of their skin, like I grew up like everyone's the same, you know, my mom raised me right.
Right.
So like I was also just like a less fortunate kid, you know, my mom worked a job. She raised girls by herself. You know, she was a single mom. She had some help, you know, but like I didn't have the best of clothes. So I was already bullied for that. You know, I couldn't go to the movies all the time. I couldn't do this all the time. So I was always bullied. And, you know, the rumor, like not rumors, but, you know, the remarks about like, oh, you're poor, you know, that didn't really bother me. Right. That was like the, you know, standard bullying, I would mm-hmm. say, you know, yeah. But I didn't have that backbone for the longest time until I hit high school.
Mm-hmm.
Eighth grade, the bullying started getting, you know, that's when social media started really getting big.
Oh.
So it became really nasty. Eighth grade, I had Okay. I had moms bullying me. Their daughters didn't like me. Therefore they didn't like me. I think it was mainly because I just got tired of girls and I just started hanging out with a lot of guys, you know? It's just like one of those things for me. I had a few girlfriends, but girls stabbed me in the back so much that I was just done with it. I was like, you know what? Like, if these bitches are going to be bitches, I'm just going to act like, you know, I'm just going to hang out with dudes because, you know, at least they're going to be like brutally honest. But then also, like, you know, I'll gain a tough shell from that, you know?
Yeah.
But the sluts, the whores, the fake pregnancy, even though I was a virgin, you know, the fake pregnancy, like Hannah's pregnant, rumors started. And like I said, this is where the social media ties in. There used to be this app, I think it was like called Form Spring Me or something. And it's when you can send people anonymous messages. And when I tell you, I started getting people to tell me to go kill myself, it was at least four a day to just go kill myself. You're a slut. You're ugly. You amount to nothing. And then, you know, summer going in, that was all of eighth grade. I just literally hood up, just cried when I went to school, cried when I left school. I wanted to go home so bad. I didn't want to be there. Summer into eighth grade, like going into ninth grade, I thought I was getting a break. But then that's when the moms started coming in. I had a mother make a fake Facebook page about me. My picture. How old was I in eighth grade? 15?
Sounds about right. Yeah.
A picture of a 15-year-old girl from a 30, 40-year-old mother with slut on it. And this went on and on. And it was to the point where I think social media was so new that like police or anything didn't know what to do about it. Cause my mom, she went, she was like, this is not okay. You know, we went to the school and it was just like, it was more of like, I think when social media at that time was kind of more like a freedom of speech thing. So like nothing could be touched. But meanwhile, I'm getting slandered by not only girls my age and guys my age, but now they're middle-aged mothers.
Yeah. And I think if we could pause there, take yourself your little break. But this is where I don't think where I was talking about, like I said, the school, you know, schoolyard playground rules.
Yeah.
Boys being boys, girls being girls, the teasing, the bullying and all in the old days, way different. Once parents got involved, shit stopped right away.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah, you would think. You know, that was back then. Yeah, things, you know, once a parent came in, everything stopped, you know, because hey, you need to chill out because adults are supposed to be smarter.
Yeah.
But you're right. Then all of a sudden this fucking social media shit comes
in. Yeah, and these moms are like this bougie mom posse and they just think, okay, our daughters are like a little clique and they don't like this girl, so we don't like this girl.
Yeah. And this is where I was, parenting fucking fails if you're doing that shit. I don't care who you are. I don't even care if you're going to tell me you'll never listen to my show again. Good, because I don't want that kind of fucking crap. That's where you failed as a human being.
A parent.
You failed as a parent. You know, you failed in life now. If you're going to sit there and act like your child's age to the point where you're going to bully another child, there's something fucking wrong with you.
Yeah.
And you, I don't think you realize the damage you're doing, not just to the person you're bullying, the damage you're doing to your own kids, the damage you're doing to your own fucking life.
Yeah, know, because... Because
you're not being looked or respected. You know,
yeah,
at all,
you're literally just teaching and encouraging your child the bad behavior. I was destroyed. Like, I was like, well, if adults think about like think this like me, like about me, then like what's wrong with me? Like, what am I doing wrong? I started dressing again in baggier clothes. I started dressing in more like conservative clothes and I used to be like that kid that would dress in like bright clothes, you know, that was me. But I just stopped. Like, I just started dressing really like proper and boring because I didn't want to be noticed. And the parents did not stop there. I had one passion going into ninth grade, and that was I was a cheerleader. And this mother of this girl that did not like me, who, to mention, she and I used to be very close friends. Mm-hmm. She just stopped liking me one day because I broke up with her boyfriend's best friend. And I don't know what that had to do with me. You know, I'm not going to be with someone just because you want me to be with them. But cheer was my passion, and I nailed my audition or whatever the hell it's mm-hmm. called for varsity cheer, which is like I nailed that. Like, I practiced for weeks and weeks and weeks, and that was the one thing that I think at that point in my life that I was holding on to. I didn't have anything else, you know. My mom was really sick at the time. I was living with my grandparents. You know, my sisters were older, so like they're, you know, graduating, doing college things, and it was the thing that I had to clutch onto. And this mom was involved with the, you know, cheer society of the school district, mm-hmm. and I didn't make varsity. Mm-hmm. They put me on like JV. But I was like, I aced that. Like, I practiced for weeks. There was no reason. Like, I had that in the bag. Like, literally, when I went into my audition, they all stood up and clapped for me. What does that tell you? Standing ovation? Like, you got it.
Right.
You know, like, and not to mention backstory, I grew up cheering. My right. mom was a coach. Like, we did competition. Mm-hmm. Like, I had that shit in the bag. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I messed something up, you know, when I saw the results. And I was like, I'm like embarrassed. Like, I don't want to be JV, you know, I'm going to be cheering for people that aren't even in my grade, you know? Mm-hmm. And to come to find out that this girl was going around and couldn't keep her mouth shut, that her mom made sure I didn't make varsity because her daughter, the girl that did not like me, made varsity. When I literally watched her do her audition.
God, yeah. See, this is
so it was beyond that. And I know that kind of sounds light and it doesn't seem deep, but you got to think this already damaged girl who literally had nothing to hold on to and like but one passion that literally destroyed me. Mm-hmm. I think that's when I started kind of, I was pissed.
Right.
And I think that's when like my acting out started a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think I was just like, I'm fucking done. Because the bullying was only getting worse. Mm-hmm. You go, I didn't do cheer at all. I went into ninth grade and, you know, in ninth grade, you meet people and, you know, you start dating other people. Like, you know, sometimes you date older guys and stuff like that, which only made it worse for me. Because then I'm a slut. And again, you know, after already being called a slut. And then it got physical. I would have people come up behind me and shove me into my locker. I had people purposely drop their food trays on me at lunch. Meanwhile, like, it's just like the school was just non-existent, just, mm-hmm. you know, turning a shoulder, you know, because I'm just some poor girl and, you know, I don't belong here. And it got to the point where I started cutting myself. Because I just didn't want to live anymore. I didn't want to be around people anymore. I felt like if I'm getting bullied this bad, like I just need to be at peace. Like I don't want to think anymore. I don't want to be anymore, you know, like I just got to get out of here. And that went on for months. I think I cut myself for a few years, you know, I think that was, you know, 15 to 17. I did start to fight back though. Mm-hmm. I remember one day this girl, she just shoved me the wrong way and I just was not in the mood that day. And I remember I just saw black. And when I came out of it, the girl was laying on the ground and I had smashed her head into, you know, those like circuit breakers or whatever. Mm-hmm. There was a dent in it. Mm-hmm. And luckily there was this one teacher there and I won't name his name. But he was honestly like, I think the reason why I didn't attempt to kill myself at that time, because he saw what I was going through and he saw how the school system was failing me. And he would tell me, he's like, whenever you need, he's like, just go into my office. Like, and he had like, oh my God, he had this special bear that like whenever I would sneak into his office, he would just give it to me for comfort. Like he knew I needed that. So I always remember him, and I hope I run into him one day, you know, because I think he like saved me.
Yeah.
More than, oh, I'm sorry.
Take a break there, buddy. May sound like a weird time to take a break on this, but
listen, I need a break.
Yeah. But listen, everyone, I want four stories go on. We teamed up. As you can see, we're wearing some new gear. This is something that, shut off the video. There we go. I want everybody to take notice that we are wearing Reaper apparel. We've been, Hannah and I, we keep saying, hey, we don't want to do a Patreon. We don't want to ask people to pay for our stuff. We don't have the time to give that kind of stuff. We don't want to do donations anymore because, you know, it's asking for money. This is a great way. Now we got some kind of sponsorship really here. Go to reaperapparelco.com. reaperapparelco.com. If you go on there, I'm going to have a special link in here too as well. If you go on their website, just by putting in their website, look at their cool stuff, hoodies, t-shirts, hats, stickers, little wristbands. Like they got a whole bunch of cool stuff. But what I like about the company itself, Dan is the owner, and he started the company out back in 2020. And we all know what went on in 2020. Yeah. All this sort of depression crap and all and everybody. Well, he, no different than anybody else, Dan was, you know, going through the same thing. He was reminded that you have to make every minute count, even the hard ones. He battled severe anxiety, borderline depression, and, you know, he knew that things had to change. So he built this company based on that. So there's a message behind all this Reaper gear. So
it's check like, it out. Yeah. When we found, well, like, you know, Reaper apparel, it really touched with me. Especially his story. And, you know, he has the saying broken, but not defeated on the back of my shirt and on his bracelet. And that really touched me. I love it.
So definitely, I want people to realize that this year company has, and Hannah and I, the Eye Opener Society, we've always been open to small businesses. So I said, this is perfect. Go to their website, buy what you want. If you use the code Eye Opener Society, 10%, that's 10 and the percent sign, all one word, and you get 10% off your merchandise. Simple as that. Or if you just follow the link that I'm going to put in here, you don't even got to put that in. It automatically gives you 10% off. We get a little bit of a kickback. You guys get cool merchandise, and Dan and Reaper Apparel gets, you know, their fair share, and he keeps his business. You're supporting a small business, and you're not supporting something really big. You're supporting somebody who has a passion, wants to live, and wants to move forward. Reaper Apparel co.com. I'm just so happy about
this.
It's so awesome. I want everybody to just go there, even if you're not looking to buy anything. Don't forget, you get friends, families, birthdays, Christmases, you know, and some people might be into the same type of gear. You got a place to go to get it. And if you like this show, you're helping us out, you're helping them out, you're helping yourself out, because now you're actually getting something. Because if you're just giving us donations, we're not giving you anything other than our podcast, which we think is great. But reaperapparel.com, this is our first commercial, first time doing it. We're going to be throwing the commercials in on our podcast and all that. It's on our Facebook. And don't forget, just follow the link that I'm going to put on the bottom of this, in the synopsis for your program that you're listening to or watching, whether it be on Rumble or YouTube. Go and follow that link. Get yourself 10% off of that merchandise that you're going to buy, okay? Supports a really, really good person, a really good small company with a really good vision. So we're going back into your story. Go for it, buddy. Now you're stronger than I am.
Yeah. So I had that teacher. And I do, like I said, I really hope I run into him one day, because I would love to thank him. Definitely, because I think he was like one of the only things keeping me going, and that little teddy bear. I don't even think he teaches there anymore. But as time went on, you know, towards the end of my ninth grade career, I was very excited to get out of school, hoping it would stop. And then I made the mistake of dating an older guy. And I thought it was going very well. And I don't even think you know about this, so we might have to do another
There's
disclosure.
stuff I don't know about.
But I dated this older guy and, you know, things were going well. It was so cool. You know, I was dating a guy that could drive and pick me up from school. I didn't have to ride the bus. So the bullying on the bus stopped because I was getting like things thrown at me on the bus and everything like that. So it was like, it was cool. You know, I felt like, you know, I had someone, you know, you think like, oh, this person's mature. Well, he was mature until I noticed that he's had anger issues. And he, you know, I was a young kid. I wasn't ready for like sexual things and stuff like that. But he did force himself on me. I tried to fight and, you know, he fought back. I never told anybody as far as like my grandparents, because I come from a family that, you know, would probably do some illegal things instead of seeking legal justice. And I had a very soft spot for his mother. So I went to her and I told her what happened. She got him professional help, but my nightmares started again about, you know, that triggered, you know, my nightmares from when I was four. So that's, I kind of started to get an idea that like, maybe this really was real. But, you know, at the time it was just like, my heart could not take any more depression or anxiety. It couldn't take any more thoughts. So I forced it out of my brain. I was like, I can't do this. But then I was dealing with, you know, being taken advantage of and being physically harmed by a person that, you know, you think it's like your first love. And so we didn't get a, you know, domestic violence number, but please call 911, you know, or, you know, tell a responsible person, grown up, if you're underage or something like that, because you're not alone. Thousands of women and men go through this. And it's unfortunate that people think that using their hands is okay. But I fought back. And I think I'm okay with not talking about, well, I mean, like talking about it without crying or anything like that, because I fought back. You know, I never talked to that person again. I would turn the other corner if I saw him in a hallway. But I think that's when that backbone grew for me. I just stopped taking shit from people. If people started calling me a slut or if I saw things about me on social media, I would fight back and I would be really, really nasty about it. Because I was just done. I was like, you know what? Like, I have nothing else to lose. I already hate myself. I'm already cutting myself. I have nothing to lose. I don't care about my character anymore. I'm going to destroy these people the way that they destroyed me, because I'm not just going to sit here and let them huddle into me more. I'm not going to let them push me farther in the tunnel than I already am, because I don't see the light right now. So I'm not thanking that person. That person is, but that event made me stronger in a time that I definitely needed to be stronger. And then I finally got out of ninth grade and I moved away from the school that the bullying was. I removed everybody from social media. I stopped paying attention to the things that were being said about me. And, you know, I think I was slowly starting to, you know, I was still depressed and I was still anxious, but I was slowly starting to, I think, find a new groove in life and, you know, find new passions and try to be okay. Because I think at that time it was just like, I was so depressed and I didn't want to be there anymore, but like, I didn't want to leave my mom. Like, 'cause you know, you always hear those stories about like, people don't realize when they like die, like who you're leaving behind. So I had this mindset in my head that it's just like I didn't want to be alive anymore, but I thought suicide was very selfish. So I held on for a little bit, and this is when I was back with my mom and you. And things I feel like started to get better. I was in a relationship. I was doing okay in school. I was meeting, new friends from the new area that we were at. And that's when bad influence kind of started hitting me. I got into underage drinking. I started smoking weed. I was hanging around with older people, and it was a really bad crowd. But I think that was sort of like an escape for me. I wanted to feel numb, and that sounded like it was a good idea, and I'm not gonna lie, like when I smoked, I was completely numb and I was like the happiest I've ever, I was happy in those elements, but like coming down from it was just like, holy shit, like this is, I'm not okay, like this is just temporary. And it was to the point where I was like, I couldn't do normal things that I wanted to do. Because I would just be like drunk all the time, or I'd be high all the time. And then me and my boyfriend at the time, we broke up. And I feel like that was like my first like love, like that was the person that like he had a really rough childhood like I did, and we connected in like some like level. And when you're at that age, you're like 16, 17 years old, your whole world stops when you lose your first love. You think you're gonna die. But the problem was, is that I already wanted to die. And I think once I lost that person, I was just done. I was like, I just don't care anymore, like I was screaming and crying every night. I felt like more of a burden for my mom than I did as like a blessing. So,
Take a breather.
I'm good.
Okay.
I was just I went into the shower, and I was gonna try to kill myself, and I just couldn't. I couldn't, like, I hate blood, so I couldn't bear to cut myself like deep enough to kill myself. So, okay, I'm good. I went into my bedroom, I locked my door, and I took a whole bottle of ibuprofen. Sorry.
It's okay.
And I just remember, I think a part of me didn't want to die, but like most of me wanted to die, because I remember telling my best friend, I was just like, I can't do it anymore. Like, I just want to go to sleep. And I think something in her knew that something wasn't right. So I went off to sleep. I passed out. I had a whole bottle of ibuprofen in my body almost. I think there was like 17 or something with a seven. Awkwardly, that's my favorite number. Pills in my body, and I was dying. And I remember my mom busting into my door. I think you were in the
I
shower.
was in the shower.
Because paramedics and a police officer knocked on the door because my best friend called the cops from Florida. She was on vacation. What a way to ruin my best friend's vacation. She just knew that, like, I think she knew I was just tired. So I remember like coming to, and like I was numb. Like I couldn't feel anything. I was so sick at the same time though. Like, but everything in my mind was quiet, except for I remember my mom screaming and crying. And I think it, like, I think in that moment, like, I was like completely just like, what the fuck did I just do? Like, I think I destroyed my mom. And I remember being so weak that, like, and the stairs were not easy at that house, and they had to come up with a stretcher and take me to the hospital. And
Oh God. It's so funny to me. Not funny, but I remember in the ambulance, they were, you know, pumping me with stuff. And I remember this one paramedic. He looked at me and he's like, are things really that bad? And I was like, yeah, like they're really that bad. And he gave me a hug and he's like, I'm sorry if that's inappropriate. He's like, but I just really feel like you need it right now. He's like, I just want to let you know that there's so much more to life right now. Like, you just don't see it yet. And, you know, he covered me up with blankets and he stood with me, like sat with me the entire time until the doctor came in. And, you know, they took over and he kept, let me keep this blanket from the ambulance. I still have that blanket. But it was just like I said, back to like my teacher, it's just like those people that don't feel like they make a difference in people's lives. But, you know, I remember him. Like if I saw him at a grocery store tomorrow, like I would remember him. And I remember laying in the hospital bed and not wanting to see my mom because I didn't want her to be disappointed in me. And I didn't want her to think it was like her fault. I was just like, I just didn't want to live anymore. Like I was tired, like being so depressed and anxious 24/7 makes you so tired to the point where it's like your body just wants to go. Like you just want it to stop. You want to not breathe. You don't want to think. And I remember just laying there in the hospital bed waiting for, you know, whatever they did. I was so out of it. I don't even remember, you know, for it to work. And I was just like, I remember laying in the bed, like thinking like, oh my God, I can't even fucking kill myself properly. You know, like I survived, like what the hell is going on? And then there was this psycho crazy guy there that really slapped, like didn't physically slap me in the face, but it slapped me in the face because he was literally like psychotic. Like, and I don't mean to be like sound rude, like, and I don't mean to say like he's a crazy guy, but he was literally like, I think schizophrenic or something like that, where he was going into like a huge episode where he was strapped down and he was so violent and he was saying vulgar things that like I immediately, like I went back and it was like I was like 5 years old again and all I wanted was my mom. So I remember like begging the nurse. I was like, please go get my mom. Like, I can't be alone. Like, I want my mom. And I was like so scared to see her. And, you know, all she did was like cry and hold my hand and tell me that she was sorry. And I just like, I wanted to like let her know that it wasn't her fault. Like, she didn't fail me. Like, my mom has always been like my person, my rock. Like, she still is. I'm 26 years old and like I can't live without my mom. But at that time I was just like, I feel like it didn't make it worse, like, but like I almost felt like safe, like, you know, like I was forgiven. So after that, I had to go to the hospital for 2 weeks. And the hospital, and this is why I stress and this is why I'm even talking about this, is that like so many people are afraid to get help, but going to that hospital, oh my God, it was like one of the best things that ever happened to me. I met so many people my age that were going through the same things as I was, and, you know, worse things. Or And it was like an eye opener for me. I realized that like I wasn't alone. That these feelings, like, you know, and thoughts, they're not, you know, they're not normal, but, you know, they're not like something seriously wrong with me, you know, like these were thoughts that other people have had before. And they got me on medications. They had me doing, you know, positive affirmations. They had me busy with like activities. And it was like a calling came to me. You know, I was still super, you know, depressed and anxious, but I was with these big group of people, like kids my age that were going through the same things. So like, I didn't have to worry about being bullied, or I didn't have to worry about being, you know, abused or pushed or, you know, texted hateful messages. Like, I was just with these kids that were literally going through similar things that I was going through. And I became like an advocate for them. Like, I think that's where like my mother role like really kicked in. It was just like, because like I would watch them cry or go into episodes and like my problems didn't even seem that big anymore to me. Like, cause I was so worried about them and, you know, making sure that like they knew that like life goes on. Like, no matter if you can't see that light at the end of the tunnel, it's there. And I think after that, you know, I got home, I was on medications, I went to therapy twice a week. Oh my God, that freaking therapist, his name was Carl. I won't give his last name out, but he's another one of those people where it's like, I really wish I could just see him. Because once I like got home and I was doing that, I felt more like alive than I did for years, you know. I was in such a dark hole for years. And talking to Carl, you know, I felt like I gained like more of a friend. Like, I didn't feel like he was talking to me like he was just doing his job, you know. I felt like he genuinely cared. Shout out to Carl, he was a great therapist. But as you know, time went on, I was still taking my medications. I was still depressed, but I wasn't suicidal depressed. You know, my mind started to be at ease, you know. Mm-hmm. I still have my moments. Gary can attest to this. You know, I would be just crying or angry singing in my bedroom. And I think singing definitely helped me too. I kind of went through this like really hard phase. I mean, music's still so important to me. I have a microphone tattooed on me. But I went through this phase where it was like music was my escape. Music made the thoughts stop. So I did everything and I like in my power to find something that would make the thoughts stop. I'm still anxious. I will always be anxious. I've definitely learned to develop with my anxiety. But when I got home, you know, I thought, you know, like I said, it was going well. And then I went back. I don't know what I did. I don't know why, but I started going back to drinking and I started smoking and doing stupid stuff. And that's when my rebellious stage hit really hard. You know, we joke about the tracker on my phone, but it was to the point where it's like, I think a more of understanding than my mom was. Cause I think after the event happened, it was just like, my mom was like, really like wanted to like tight leash me, but you were like, she's a teenager. She needs to explore. You know, we have the tracker on her phone. Like, at least we know she's not in a ditch somewhere. But I think it's just because, like I said, the meds helped, but they just didn't make it stop the way I wanted it to stop. But I didn't want to put my mom through that again, even though, you know, I was still suicidal at that point in time. I just always kept in the back of my head, like, my mom and, like, going back to that place, like, and like those people that I met. I'm still very fortunate that, like, I know that most of the people that I was in there with are still alive and they have all great lives now, you know. And, you know, that's a one plus about social media. But I went to this, like I said, I went to a rebellious stage where I just went out and went missing for a couple days. Good thing, shout out for the tracker. But I think it was just because, like I said, like, I just wanted it to stop. And I knew, like, back in my mind, like, oh, this made it stop before, so I should just do this again and it would help out. So I did that. And then I ended up flunking school really bad. I just said, fuck school, I don't care. And went on with that. And I think it finally hit me that I needed to get my shit together when my mom got a letter like, this bitch's grades are so bad, like, she's gonna fail 10th grade. And I'm like, shit, like, I gotta get myself together. Because, like, one thing I'm not gonna be is like a disappointment. Like, my sisters are very smart. I'm not gonna, like, it was like almost like a competition thing for me, because then my OCD really kicked in and I was like, oh shit, like, hell no. You know, I gotta make sure, like, I'm like my sisters. So I started to get a little bit more put together, started focusing on school more. And then I met Justin. my husband. And I think my life turned around a little bit there. You know, I was going good with school again. You know, I had this new guy, you know, I was with, but I kept it at like a appropriate level, I think, like a good balance where I still hung out with like the friends that I did have. You know, I hung out with Justin and like I kept on school and I stopped smoking. I drank, but not excessively to the point where, you know, I was sick or anything like that, because I was like literally coming home every night drunk and running into walls and crying in my bedroom because alcohol makes your depression worse anyway. And I was, you know, getting it together. And then comes, no, oh gosh, 2016. Oh my God, am I saying that? 2015. I'm sorry. My best friend passed away. He died in a car crash. And then my world came crashing down again. I went into a deep, worst depression that I was ever in, because I literally felt like a piece of me died when he died. And I still feel like that. But yeah, sorry, it's really hard for me to talk about. I completely did a 360. You know, I think I was finally starting to get like happy. Like my demons weren't winning. You know, I was fighting my demons every day and winning. Like I was conquering them. And then he died and my world froze. I went completely 360 back to crying in my room. I still like am frightened at the scream that I let out when I was told he died. I don't think I've ever like heard a scream like that before. You know, like it literally just felt like I was dead with him. So that happened to me, and I, you know, as time went on, it was really hard for me to get in a car. It was really hard for me to talk to anybody. I kind of shut everybody out. And I just, you know, I went on with my life because, you know, I was like, I can see how broken his mom is. And I would, you know, like even thinking about killing myself, like even though I wanted to die, I was just like, I couldn't do that to my mom because I saw my best friend's mom like literally destroyed. So I was like, I would never do that. And you know, as time went on, I lived on, you know, I lived on for him, and I still miss him every day. It has not gotten any easier. I cry less, but I still feel like a part of me is missing. But I honored him, my son's name after him. So yeah, that's some of my story. I've been through a lot more in my life, but this is kind of just the main stuff that I wanted to share this podcast. But I'm alive. I'm here. I have survived violence. I've survived sexual assault. I've survived a suicide attempt. I've survived a death of someone. You know, not to get too much into it, but I didn't really grow up with my dad. So I grew up in a single household with a, you know, my whole depression and everything stems from my dad and just not wanting me as a kid. But I survived, you know. I'm 26 years old. I'm about to be 27. And here I am. I'm a mother of a beautiful IVF miracle boy who I was in labor for 36 hours for and had emergency C-section. And he is the most wonderful thing I have ever seen in my life. He is my pride and joy. Even though I get frustrated at him at least four times a day. And I didn't even want to look at him yesterday because because he was bad at class, but I'm here and I survived. And I think I just really wanted to do this podcast because I want people to know that even though you think you're so far deep in the tunnel and you can't see that light, it's there. You just have to keep fighting. And even when you're tired, just give a little every day and eventually you'll go to that light. And I know that sounds so cliche because everyone says there's always light at the end of the tunnel, but like it's so deep. I've mentioned this before, like happiness is a journey, not a destination. It's so true. Like you just have to really think about it because like I'm living proof. I've been through so much. Like I don't know how I'm still here, but I fought and I fought like hell and I conquered my demons. And every day I wake up and I'm anxious and I'm sad, but I get up because I have a wonderful little boy and I have a roof over my head and I got my best buddy here. I have my mom. I have my husband. You know, I have wonderful family. And you know, I have a job that I love and yeah, like I just get up and I do it because I just don't want my demons to win. You know, no matter how loud they are, I don't ever want to be in a position where they win again.
Good for you. This.
Oh, sorry, guys. That was.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to get through this too because I feel like Hannah, I've known you, but at the same time, I never knew you.
Yeah.
You were very much to yourself. I understood nothing because I didn't get to know you like I know you now. And I remember that day very well when you mother came breaking into when I was taking a shower saying, Hannah, just swallow a bottle of pills. And all I remember is you looking at me and you burst into tears. And I think that hurt me too because it just
seemed like, I said I was sorry.
You did. You did.
I did.
You did, sweetheart. I love you. I love you to death. I really do. But yeah, and you know as well, because I mean, this whole thing, suicide, depression, your mother suffers from it.
And yeah.
You were going through it. Your mother was just as bad.
Yeah.
And I always feel I was just spreading myself so thin.
Yeah.
Trying to help her and trying to get her. I mean, there was literally probably 5 or 6 years that just disappeared because there was no time frame with your mom.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And I don't know. I don't like hearing the stories, but at the same time, they need to be told.
Yeah.
They do. And again, to the audience, I mean, suicide 988 or 911, but 988, I like the fact that they set up something like that for suicide crisis. Bullying 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255. And anything with sexual abuse, 1-800-656-4673. But here we are now. We're the Eye Opener Society. You and I are best fucking friends ever. I'm happy you're here, but that's the thing. You're here.
I'm here. I survived. I am a warrior. My tattoo on my side, my arm, the chaos within found balance. I'm not balanced all the time, but I'm here and I appreciate the little things in life now. And I look at situations and it sounds cliche to say, but I always just say to myself, you know, it could be worse. It could be worse. You know, I could be back in my bedroom at 15 years old or however, 16, 15, whatever, swallowing a bottle of pills, but I'm not.
Right.
I'm here. I'm not cutting my wrist anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing any of that. Like, I'm here. And I just wanted to give that message out to people. I kind of dragged on a little bit, but I wanted to let people know that, like, that's why, you know, I part of me does this podcast is that I want to help people and I want to touch people's lives and I want them to know that you're never alone. And, you know, I'm a hard on the sleeve type of person.
But yeah.
And just remember that, people, Hannah's here. You can be here. We want you here. But you need to want to be here too. So reach out, get the help that you need. Things are going to get worse at times. I've been through some cycles as well, actually recently, because like I say, it builds up.
I became
the strong one and nothing bothered me. I dealt with your mother's suicide attempts and dealt with yours. And after a while, it starts to build up. And no matter how strong you are,
yeah,
I start to go through my cycles. It probably hasn't been as bad, but I have to fight every day to make sure it doesn't, because I'm like last person standing, really.
Yeah.
And that's why I look forward to doing these shows, because I get to sit here with you. You know, that's why I like to smoke cigars with you, sit down.
Yeah.
It brings a different level. It takes away all that nonsense. Like you said, you would turn into like alcohol and drugs. Like, who needs that if we can just sit and talk about and just be ourselves? And
yeah,
it just places my stress levels, it places my mental state right to a stable level. And I appreciate that. I appreciate everything about you. I don't ever want to see anything happen to you.
Yeah.
I just think you're phenomenal. You're gorgeous. You are strong. You're intelligent. You have a lot going for you. Yes, you battle your demons. Yes, you battle your anxiety. But you know what? It's what makes you you. And you're strong and you can deal with it.
Yep. And everyone else can as well.
Absolutely. And
you're never alone.
Yeah. And that's really the whole thing for this podcast. We've been talking about it, Hannah, just brave enough to do it. I can't appreciate that more. I hope that anybody who knows somebody, or if you're going through this yourself, understand Hannah's here. Hannah's come a long way. She has a beautiful house. Maybe soon that garage will get done. But she built her life and she's right where she wants to be now. And she's happy. You can be too. You're going to fight through so much. Relapses and everything else.
Yeah, take those battles and make them motivation to make something of yourself. Because I think that's what I did. I bought my first house at 19 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I did that shit, you know? I got married at 20. I have a beautiful child. I went through 3 years of infertility treatments for my child. Like, I battle every day. But the difference is that I don't feel weak anymore. I'm just a tired warrior sometimes. But I think of myself as a warrior. And if I ever start to see that light, you know, shimmer, I'm like, nope, I got to fight towards that light. I just got to keep going. Just got to keep going. You know, Dory from Finding Nemo, just keep swimming, you know? But yeah.
And you did it. And everybody else, you did. And anybody else can too. Reach out, get the help that you need. Just one more time again, bullying. If you're being a victim of bullying and you need help, 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. Any kind of suicide crisis, dial 911. Or if you really need somebody to talk to, or if you just don't feel comfortable with 999, I'm sorry, 911, dial 988. 988 for a suicide crisis and anything to do with sexual abuse, 1-800-656-4673. If anybody wants to say anything to Hannah, or if anybody just wants to, you know, hey, you know, I'm going through the same thing, reach out to us. The Eye Opener Society at gmail.com. Go to our website, Eye Opener Society onpodium.co. I'll have all the links down below. This is a tough kind of episode for us. We didn't think about going on this long. We were planning on doing plenty of other, you know, recordings in a short period of time. But this to me is bravery from Hannah, and I don't think I would be as open as she was, but listen, you got to be thankful that she was. If you took an ounce away from that, if something opened up your eyes or just said, wow, that's inspirational, I got to get the help. Listen, then we've done something.
Yeah.
And that's all it's about. I mean, I don't even care about the podcast. And, you know, at this point, it's really just about you guys. We always try to see life on a higher level. Higher self, This was tough, I think, for everybody. Yeah. But listen, guys, I'm going to leave it at that. Yeah. You're good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening. Yeah. If you've made it all the way through the podcast, I appreciate you. And we will talk to you guys soon.
Yeah. And don't forget, I'll have all the links down below. But don't forget, listen, reach out. Help us out. ReaperApparelCO.com. Have the links down below. Or if you just go to ReaperApparelCO.com. Eyeopener Society 10 and the percent sign gives you 10% off. But if you follow the link, boom, it's going to take you right to that 10%. Help them out. They're a great company. They stem from a lot of this anxiety, depression, and all themselves. And help them out. And we'll see you soon.
Yep. See ya.